Rachel Daly is a striker. The end.
The Koigig Pod on OTB Sports.
She's got great passing range. She scores goals. She's great in the air.
Brilliant in the air, yeah.
Subscribe to the feed in the OTB Sports app now. OTB GAA.
The Football Pod on Off the Ball in partnership with AIB. Proud sponsors of the Football, Hurling and Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. Hashtag the toughest.
Hello there, and you're very welcome along to episode 44 of the Football Pod with Paddy Andrews and James O'Donoghue. Boys, I'm afraid to ask how you are. Paddy, how are you?
I feel better.
Okay, James, are you good?
I'm perfect.
We have got a cracking episode ahead of us here, lads. We have an exclusive interview. The first interview that James Horan has done since he stepped down as Mayo manager for the second time. Back in June. So really looking forward to getting James onto the show. He's had an incredible stint and influence over Mayo football in the last 15 years. Never mind his playing career from 95 to 2002. So looking forward to getting James on for a bit of a chat. We are recording on Sunday evening. It's been a busy weekend in the club provincial championships. Today, James, Kerins O'Rahillies of Strand Road just about held off Airog of Ennis, 1-9 to 1-8. David Moore was sent off for two yellow cards.
I heard it was harsh.
20 minutes in. I heard it was harsh too, but that's going off a couple of Kerry tweets, so I don't know.
They had a bit of a lead built up even by then. I think they were able to dig in, but if it was closer, they could have been in a bit of trouble, I'd say.
Tommy Walsh got a very early goal.
Yeah.
And Airog had a couple of big chances later on to edge them over the line, but they had a man sent off and a black card too. So one of the interesting things, I'm not asking you to have a swipe here, but the Airog fans outnumbered the Blue of Cairns O'Rahilly in the stand, apparently, listening to Radio Kerry by 2/3 to 1/3. Would that have been expected in Tralee?
Jeez, I didn't hear that. It wouldn't be, to be honest. I mean, I know that
it was Ambrose and Tim.
Well, I mean, the Clare crowds always do travel. I remember Kilmurry of Brickin came down to Dr. Crokes one time and packed the place out as well and nearly turned them over. So I think they do travel, but I'm surprised at that because I know the Rahillies were really gung-ho about this, about winning the club championship and going on and representing Kerry and Munster. So I'm surprised they didn't show.
Yeah.
But it wasn't in their home pitch either. It was in Ossistack Park.
Okay, so it's the complete other side of the town.
Well, it's still not as far as it's still not that far. I must say I'm surprised at that.
Okay, but, we'll wait and we'll see, you know, what's said about it. But that was the vibe anyways from the commentary on the radio on Radio Kerry at halftime. That is what I heard. And I saw a couple of tweets about it too.
Well, to be fair, three of the Rahillies players travelled from, two from Dubai and one from New York.
Unbelievable.
Did the travelling.
Cormac Coffey, Jack Savage and Gavin O'Brien, they actually contributed 7 points of Cairns O'Rahilly's 1-9 today.
Oh yeah, well they're three of their five main players, main lads. Quality, three of them absolute quality.
O'Brien was the wing forward who kind of broke in a couple of years ago in the league, didn't he?
Yeah, played a league under Peter Keane and
he was very impressive.
Fell away a little bit, but yeah, I think he's one that got away for Kerry.
Yeah, very impressive.
Just one that got away, serious athlete, unbelievable in the air, powerful runner. Lovely fella, has a goal in him, has a point in him. So yeah, I think he's one that got away for Kerry.
Yeah, those flights home were worth it. Fair play to the three lads and the club for sorting that out. And the other semi-final in Munster, Paddy, we weren't expecting this.
Yeah,
Newcastle West beat Clonmel Commercials, a huge win for Limerick football, 116 to 110 after extra time. Some going.
I'm shocked at that.
Some all going. The Saudi money going into Newcastle, like.
Clonmel must have thought they had it won early.
That was a good one, Paddy.
That was a little chuckle there for that one. That was
I liked it. And then last night in Ulster, Kilcudi All-Ireland champions bet Enniskillen Gaels 3-14 to 1-9, and Glenn of Derry just about held off Carrigan of Antrim 110 to 8 points. So our final lineups: in Leinster we've Kilmacud Crokes against the Downs, in Ulster we've Kilcudi against Glenn. There's Bailey given out. In Munster, we have Cairns O'Rahillies. I've said it right four times in the pod this week against Newcastle West. And in Connacht, we have Moy Cullen of Galway against Turla Strand of Sligo. Now, before we get James Horan on, Oisín Mullen, it's been confirmed, he's off to the Geelong Cats in Australia.
We definitely go.
definitely going this time.
Definitely going this time.
100% going this time. We wish him all the best. But that is some blow to Kevin Mack's day.
Yeah, massive.
Massive, yeah. I wonder, could Mayo have done what Tyrone did for McShane? John, was there anything that could have been done?
But they did it last year.
I'm sure they were trying, Jimmy.
They must have done it last year.
Sure, you know? They were trying. Like,
he's going to be a massive loss. What position would he pick up in the AFL? Because he's not
half back.
He's different to what's gone, isn't
he? Mark O'Connor probably. Is
Would he kind of do Mark's job?
Yeah.
Mark could be more of a baller than
yeah, Mark could have technical ability. I would think technical ability, no, she'd won it, like, but
he'd be kind of a spoiler, I suppose.
His athleticism is his biggest strength.
Yeah.
Okay.
I suppose aerially, you have to be unbelievably strong in AFL. No matter where you are, you have to be very strong in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're McStay going in there, like, obviously the Lee Keegan stuff over the last couple of weeks, murmurs and stuff, losing Oisín Mullen, that is
massive, yeah.
It's a big blow to that Mayo team.
Yeah. Mayo just, they always seem to be missing someone. Tommy Conroy and Ryan O'Donoghue injured last year, Killian injured. There's always something going on. So wishing Oisín all the best, deserves to experience Australia and see what it's like. He's done plenty so far already for Mayo at such a young age, so we'll see what happens there. I'm really looking forward to getting James Horan on here for a chat, so let's start getting to that. He took over at the age of 38 in 2010, and at his first press conference he said he wanted to make Mayo consistently competitive, looking to improve them every single time they played, and most of all he said he wanted to take the bullshit out of Mayo football. That seems like something that was achieved over the next,
I think it's fair to say, take that box.
Yeah, and I think it was a very dramatic night, speaking to Mike Finnerty and some of the lads over the years. It was a very dramatic night back in September when he was appointed, because the county board were mad to appoint Tommy Lyons. They were gung-ho. They wanted to appoint Tommy Lyons. It seemed like a done deal. A few weeks before Horan's appointment, Chairman James Waldron had listed out the seven candidates for the senior manager's job that year. John Mahon, Dennis Kearney, Anthony McGarry, Tommy Lyons, Tommy Carr, Mick O'Dwyer. And James Horan. So Mick O'Dwyer had thrown his hat into the ring. This
what year? Mick,
2010. So Mick was over the Wicklow Footballers at the time. He threw his hat into the ring for the Mayo job.
Jesus.
The Mayo public were not happy.
What?
They didn't want Mick because they thought Mick was done at this stage. They didn't want Mick.
Mick was a busted flush.
Mick gave one more year to Wicklow and he called it a day. So what could have been? James Horan took over and look what happened to Mayo football over the last 12 years. So, I tweeted at the time when Horan stepped down that I didn't think he was appreciated for what he brought to Mayo football, and I got a bit of stick for that. So.
Tell me he's not, genuinely. And like I said, we were in Castlebar this year, and we've seen kind of the mentality and the attitude towards Horan coming to the end of what ultimately would be the end of his tenure with Mayo. I think James Horan has done an incredible job with Mayo. And yes, they lost all Ireland finals, and that's kind of a stick to beat him with. But the things he said he'd do with his first press conference, what, 12 years ago? Yeah. Jesus Christ. He bloody did those things. And he seen a massive transition of some of Mayo's greatest ever players and got them back to All-Ireland finals back-to-back. Yes, they didn't perform in those games, and that's always got a little asterisk. But I think James Horan, what he's done for Mayo football, he does not owe those people anything. I think he's been absolutely outstanding. I think it's harsh, some of the comments and some of the views on his tenure as Mayo manager, because I think he's done an incredible job.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so this is episode 44 of the Football Pod with Tommy Rooney, James Donoghue and Paddy Andrews. We've been with you all year long. I'm sure you're subscribed if you're listening now. And if you're new, just hit that subscribe button. We're going to be back in early 2023 with season 3 of the pod. But lads, this is going to be our last episode. Who better to do it with than James Horan? So the Football Pod is brought to you in partnership with AIB, proud sponsors of the Football, Hurling and Camogie Club Championships. Check out hashtag the toughest for more. We're going to be back right after this with James Horan's first interview since he stepped down as the Mayo manager back in June. Hello there, and you're very welcome back to what is episode 44 of the Football Pod. And we are delighted to be joined by a very special guest today, former Mayo manager, James Horan. James, you're very welcome to the Football Pod. How are things?
I'm good, Tommy. Good. Keeping well. So good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a little while, yeah. It's probably been a while since you've come across Paddy Anders and James O'Donoghue as well. The boys have been keeping me company all year long.
Yeah. I didn't get to hear too much during the year, but got the odd snippet of the guys. Yeah. Good to listen to for the most part.
That's good.
Good. So nice to talk to you guys.
Were you guests as well last year?
No, we didn't
get. But you came on, James. You couldn't resist.
I'm pulling all the big dogs' guests today. Now. It's like
it's the O'Donoghue factor.
James,
it's 5 months now, really, since you stepped aside for the second time. Like, have you returned to a bit of normality? Is life kind of relaxed a little bit, or how are things?
I'd say so. Yeah, absolutely. Return to I suppose what you think normal life would be, you know. So doing lots of just day to day stuff, you know, with the kids. As this morning I was at under 8 basketball, and I was under 13 trials for the development squad for the girls yesterday. And so doing an awful lot of that stuff, and to be honest, really enjoying that. Just, you know, I wish it wasn't as cold on the sidelines and all that kind of stuff, but I'm doing that. Really enjoying that, just doing normal stuff, you know, because I suppose what it takes a while, and I know Paddy and the guys when you retired, it takes a while to come down off the white water raft that Intercounty is, you know. It's all adrenaline and flowing and lots of stuff, you know, sloshing around the place. So it can take a while to come down off that, you know. But I'm definitely things are steady. You know, working away and just doing lots of stuff with family and catching up with friends that I probably haven't seen in a decade, you know, or really seen or had the time to catch up with. I think I've watched every Premiership game that's been televised. I didn't watch the Premiership for 10 years or so. You know, you just wouldn't have the headspace for it. So just all that kind of stuff. So happy out.
Who do you support?
I grew up watching Dalglish and all the guys. So Liverpool through and through, you know.
Jeez. Okay, we're a Man United house here.
All right.
Cut that bit out.
And you mentioned family there. You have a young family, right?
Well, I've a range. So I've 24-year-olds down to an 8-year-old.
Okay.
So five kids. Yeah. So they're all great in different parts of the world and country and everything else. So they'll all be home shortly for Christmas. That'll be good.
It's interesting to hear that, because like you were 38 years old in September 2010 when you were handed the reins. Reading an RT piece from back then as well, it was Tommy Lyons and Tony McGarry in the mix as well. There was actually 7 names thrown out, I think, at the county board convention, James. I think it's fair to say
Don't forget John Mahan.
John Mahan was in the mix too. I get all the names here, but I don't think you were the favourite to get the job back then. And we might come back to that in a minute. But like from the age of 38 to 13 years later, it's dominated so much of your life. We talk to footballers a lot here, and the two lads have just only recently retired. And I can understand from that prism how intense being an intercounty footballer is nowadays. But being a manager, like being an intercounty manager, is that on another level? Because you obviously, you played from 95 to 02 or 03 with Mayo 2, so you've seen both sides of it. Do you find that intensity of always being on and having so many people under you is maybe something else?
Well, there's nothing like playing, obviously. Like playing is what you want to do, you know. And then if you can't play anymore, you know, we all get to that stage, you know, you want to do something else, you know. And probably, you know, if you're mad enough, management is probably the next best thing, you know. You're involved with serious guys that are ambitious and want to do well. And if you've got a skill set, you want to be part of that, you know, and then see, can you help in some way? So that's sort of what got me in. And look, I love it. I love coaching. I love being involved with people that you know have a real focus. So that was good. But for sure, management, like, so the four, it's funny you mentioned something there like that. When I took the job, I remember those people in Mayo didn't want me to take the job because I played too negative for football.
What?
When, with the club in
Ballintubber.
It was 4 years before that I was involved with that, and we came from intermediate. We won intermediate the first year I was involved, and then we eventually won senior the last year I was involved with them. But we'd Alan Dillon up front, you know, who was just at club level, was on a different. So we took a forward out of his way, and we put him as a sweeper. You know, we played the year that way, and we beat Castlebar in an absolute dogfight in the county final. You know, first time ever winning a senior, 9-8.
5-4, I think it was.
It was a pretty much horror show. And I remember going around and like, oh God almighty, do we want Warren to get the job? We play all negative football with sweepers and God knows what. So I often laugh. A lot of the commentary was, you know, or was the opposite when I got it then.
What age were you when you took the club job? You must have been straight after playing, you took the club job.
Yeah, about 2 years after. Yeah. So.
Jeez.
Yeah, so it's been, yeah. So, like, the 4 years of Ballintubber, you're, like, you know, you had Killian and Jermid and you had Dillo, as I mentioned, and you had some great players, Tom Early and all these guys. So they were madly ambitious. So the 4 years of Ballintubber were at inter-county level as such to try and get a club that was, you know, with a bunch of really good guys up to. So I really enjoyed that, and that so it went from there. But so, yeah, it's been a... Back to your point, though, it's been a long time, I suppose. And my kids now, my eldest is 24, as I say, and so like the last 15 years of her life have been like she used to come to Ballintubber trains with me all the time, and she'd know every one of the players and all, you know, when she was young and all that kind of stuff, and still has those. So there's lots of good memories from them. But yeah, it was very, very time consuming. And it's even when you're not at training or you're not on the phone to a player or whatever. I think Eamon Fitzmaurice said this one day. He said, even when you're there, you're not there. You know, so if you're at a family event or you're at someone's, the neighbor's confirmation or whatever it is, a communion, you're looking at your watch, you're looking, when can I get out so I can get to the thing, that'll, you know, that's some way football related, you know. So it was like that for a while. But look, overall, it was absolutely brilliant for me. I enjoyed it no end, working with brilliant people and getting to meet brilliant people. And then the people around that have been, that's one thing since I've been out of it really, is only in the last few weeks is I thought, Jesus Christ, the amount of brilliant people that have helped us over the last 10, 12 years, that highly qualified professional guys at in their fields were just willing to come in and help the team, you know, and I don't know if I've ever really thanked those guys at the level I should have, you know, because when you're involved in it and it's the next game or whatever. So I think over the Christmas, it's definitely something I intend to do. Those guys that helped me down through the years, or helped the team and helped the players, that let them know how thankful we are for their support and their expertise. You know,
I'm sure they know. There's a lot of first time intercounty managers this year. A couple of young managers, a couple are older first time intercounty managers. Colin O'Rourke is retired. He's going to be retiring in December to take over the Meath job. Some of the younger guys, Conor Laverty, I think, is 38 or 39. Yeah. Did you know what you were getting yourself in for?
No.
No, exactly. You haven't a clue, really. You know, you think you do, and you think you know, and you... But I suppose I would have been confident football-wise and being able to work with the players and all that aspect of it. That's, you know... and my work and all that kind of stuff, I would have a lot done from you know, a HR or an engagement point of view and all that side of things. So I would have been comfortable that would be, you know, I'd be able to work with that. But that's part of it. Then there's a whole other element to intercounty management that you can't control, that you can't really do anything. You can influence maybe some of, you know, county boards and media and all that kind of stuff. And that's a world that you don't really know till you're in the thick of it, you know. I had an idea of football wise, but not everything else that comes with it.
Did you find the dressing room different, say, even between the first time you were there and the second time? Like, because I remember when I started with Kerry and from when I finished, the two bunches were so different personalities, different upbringings, the whole lot was so different, different mentalities altogether. Did you find much of a difference the second time when you went back? Was it easier or more difficult going in the second time?
She's easy, pal. Easy. There's a lot of stuff in that. Now, hold on. definitely different. But Definitely a marked difference. You know, the second time round. When I came in the second time, you know, with a lot of the senior guys there, you know, Shamie, Tom Parsons, Donny Vaughan, all those guys were there. They stayed, Chris Barrett, they all sort of stayed a year. And then a lot of them retired. So that sort of brought some of the old into with a huge amount of new guys. You know, we'd Oisin, Owen and Hessian, Tommy Connery and all those guys coming in. So it was very different, but it's sort of different every year. And I don't know, James or Paddy, do you like the language you use or the tone that you use, depending on the people that are there, the mood of the people or the what's going on. So it changes nearly all the time. Your themes and your values will be very similar, but I suppose that how you communicate and that definitely changes over time. But there was a significant change, I think, then for my second term. You had a lot of young guys in there. So you need to factor out then they were 18, 19 type thing and became very quickly senior players for us.
Yeah. That winter, and I suppose it was probably truncated by COVID kicking in, right? But
yeah,
how you manage that turnover, because you definitely lost six or seven senior players, the lads you've mentioned. Andy Moran retired. I think he took the shine off Dublin's five in a row. He retired maybe 3 days before that final. And then you I think you give out seven debutants against Leitrim in that winter championship later on. That is an unbelievable turnover. And we saw how, you know, Dublin managed it too, and Dublin have managed it well. But like how you managed it was so impressive.
Remember the time Dublin weren't managing that well. That was the narrative at the time. That it is a massive challenge. And James, I'd say, having been in that exact work and stepped away myself, that's a massive change going from such a core group of guys. And you guys were very similar. We had a decade of games against each other with Colin Boyle and Donny Vaughan and Tom and these guys that you're talking about. To keep your team on the road whilst going through such a massive personnel change is incredibly difficult. And Dublin were struggling with that. And I always felt that with your own team, and I don't know you, James, and I always thought you did an incredible job of doing that and getting to like back-to-back All-Ireland finals. Okay, we didn't win the games in the end, but getting to a certain stage while that massive transition was happening, I thought was an incredible job to do, because that is a very, very difficult dynamic to manage in a group.
Yeah, no, for sure. But those two things that I think that, Paddy, that helped that. Like the Tommy Conroy, Oisin, Mullen, Enda Hessian, a lot of these young guys can do. Serious caliber guys, and they're serious about their football, this growth. They want to learn and develop and all that kind of stuff. So they were fantastic. And then, as I said, the senior guys, particularly Shamie O'Shea and Chris Barrett, stayed in that year. Now you know those guys well.
Too well.
Two really solid individuals, strong character, opinionated, and they came in and spent a year with the young guys, and that I think, you know, Chrissy and Seamus, they wouldn't have played much in their last year, but I think it was the most important year they had for Mayo, in that they really helped those young lads and transferred what their experiences and their knowledge to the young guys, and they got on very well. I think we managed COVID well and how we did it and the systems that we set up, you know, because geographically the way we're set up, we would have been using Zoom and Teams a lot way before COVID kicked in.
Okay.
You know, so we would have had a lot of that kind of stuff going on, and we would have had, you know, things set up online or whatever to share information, share knowledge and all that kind of stuff. So I think we sort of, in one way, maybe had a head start on certain things, you know, because other counties were setting up pods and there was all this confusion, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think we had a, and then with the young guys coming in, they embraced that sort of way of doing things and just the mingling of the different sort of eras just worked very well for us and kept it positive, kept it light, kept us, you know, how lucky we are to be able to play football when other people, you know, all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it just worked for us, and it transitioned very well, you know.
Yeah. Just before we move on, Oisin Mullen has joined the Geelong Cats. Now, Oisin Mullen had joined them last year too. And just looking back on messages or tweets from back then as well, the deal was done essentially, and Oisin changed his mind around December. How did you manage to get him to stay for one more year?
yeah, looks like he's gone. Look, Oisin again, an absolutely amazing player, amazing fella. First of all, and will be a huge success out there. Right? There's no question about it. His power and pace and his courage and his skill set. I think he's made for it, you know, for pro support. So it'll be very interesting to see how he is. But, you know, he'd be best buddies with himself and Tommy Conroy, been in Ballarobe National School together, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There was loads of stuff going on and all that kind of thing. Still in college last year, you know, all that. So, when you factor a lot of that kind of stuff in, partners, family, all that kind of stuff, maybe it just wasn't the time or wanted to have another go with May or whatever, you know. So things change year by year, you know. So it might be right now for Oisin to have a crack at it, you know. But look, we're lucky. We got a couple of years with him, yeah. Playing, you know, and a brilliant. It's funny you mentioned Chris Barlow. I can remember the first training session that Oisin came to. Okay. And we did one of, you know, box drills. You know the old box drills, and you try out the young guys and the old guys. And he was marking Chris Barrett in the first, and Chris just wanted to mark his territory, you know. So I think Chris got a little bit of a land that it was wow. Great to see. I remember it, yeah. So yeah, there was a quite physical encounter between the two of them, but it was very interesting.
Sounds about right, James. Yeah.
Yeah, we wish Oisin all the best. Yeah, no, that's class. And was there ever close getting Pierce Hanley home? Like, you know, when you talk about the inches and the percentages, was there ever any chance of that? This is completely random, but was there ever any chance of that happening?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
Not really, you know. Pierce had a serious career out there, you know, and business involvements out there. And that's where he was. Of course, you're always looking, as I'm sure everyone is, you're always looking at what options Mayo have or what can be done, or, you know, who's where, wherever they are in the world, you know, you'd always be monitoring all those situations. No, never came to pass.
Remember reading a column from Colin Boyle a few months ago, and he had been dropped by John O'Mahony in 2009, and you got him back in 2011. And he spoke about the difference in the dressing room when he came back around that time. And just from reading and listening to some of the Mayo players talking about that time, the county was at a low ebb coming into those couple of years, and you took over, and like you've coached them for 8 seasons. You've reached 7 All-Ireland semi-finals, 4 All-Ireland finals, 6 Connacht titles. The consistency, I don't know whether it's been taken for granted a little bit.
Don't forget the league title.
The league title in 2019, which you can tell how powerful that was as well, you know. But like the consistency that Mayo reached across the last 10, 11, 12 years, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like that's been taken for granted sometimes, that's just a given in a county like Mayo, but that wasn't the case. But Colm spoke about the culture that had already been created there, the players could thrive in. I didn't actually realise you'd done so much around HR and stuff like that in your work, but is that something you really enjoy doing, fostering a team atmosphere and that kind of dressing room spirit?
Happen? And I did a lot of I'm a qualified professional coach in life coach, performance coach. That's where I spend a lot of time on that. But I suppose when I was a player, and some of the managers that I had, you pick up stuff from everything and everyone around you. You know what's right, and probably you learn a lot of what's not right. From what certain managers would do or say or talk, or maybe the freedom they'd give certain players or whatever it was. So I was always of the opinion that you know, you've with an intercounty team, you've probably, you know, hundreds of years of intercounty experience or knowledge. throughout the group. And you'd be absolutely mad not to use that or let that come to the fore or let it shape how you play or how you go about things. So I suppose the job we set about was making sure that the systems or the environment around that was there so that all that good stuff could come before it could be used, you know. So that's something we definitely set out to do and just create that and, you know, give people the space where they can have their say or have their involvement or you know, shape how things are, you know. So that would be a big part.
You've mentioned the kind of the controllables and the uncontrollables when you're over an inter-county team. The last time I think I spoke to you was a couple of weeks after the Dublin win, and it was before the Tyrone game. And I asked you about the Mayo wave and the kind of excitement in the county. And you said, you cited the Gurkhas in the jungle, and you said the Gurkhas are told to roll with it. Don't fight the jungle, go with it.
And I
know that you said that was a favorite of yours, but the kind of the buzz in a county like Mayo and the atmosphere and how mental they are about their football, that was definitely something that you were able to utilize, I think, across that time, because they have furrowed a path to Croke Park over the last 12 years. And it seems like that was something you were able to tap into.
Yeah. And that's look, there's brilliant energy off the Mayo supporters. There's no question about that. And there was an uplift right across the team and fans and everything through the years, particularly through the first 4 years. And there was a really strong connection there, which is brilliant.
Did you have to go looking for that at the start, James? Because before you came in, there was that summer where they were beaten by Sligo and Longford, and there wasn't that belief there when you first took over. And I don't even think the players may have had that belief, because they've been kind of floating there for a couple of years. You know, even the All-Ireland final defeats in 04 and 06, they kind of came a little bit out of nowhere too. You know, that consistency wasn't there. Getting the people to believe, the players to believe, that's definitely something that you had to fight for, I'd say.
Oh yeah, and you go back to the first championship game. You know, I think we've talked about this before against London over in London, and went to extra time with London and got out by the skin of our teeth, and let's just say that was just one of the most unbelievable experiences of my life. I remember those. I don't know, lads, have you played in Ruislip? Have you?
No.
But like, it's the Connacht Championship there, and there was a beer garden, so you had to go through the beer tent to
this
get.
Sounds good, James. I like this. I missed out on this.
It's not good. So after the game, like, and I mean, there was people hissing at us after that game, and we had to walk through the beer tent to get to the bus. And I tell you, I thought we were going to be stoned. I really did. So look, we got out of that, but it's just to your point, Tommy. Just belief and. Everything else was just so it was so shaky then, you know. And but the 3 weeks after that, those were really coming together. And it's funny, we played Galway a few weeks later, we're 4 points down at half time against Galway in the next round. And met an official, I won't say who was telling me that this doesn't go well, you're gone, pal.
Jesus.
So yeah, look, these you know, so it would have been the quickest inter-county manager in career. Of all time, but everyone was rattled, and you know, it was that kind of thing. So look, we went, you know, we bet Galway that day. We started, it was funny in the dressing room halftime, 4 points down, everything rattled. We just knew we were going to win that game where things were, you know, for whatever combination of reasons, you know, and we just kicked on, and every training session, every day, every chat, every conversation got a little bit more together or a bit more belief, and it just built from there, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny that James and James, you're the same with Kerry and ourselves with Dublin as well. Like, it's very philosophical, but it is a journey. And you start out, and where you end up is an incredible difference from where you start in games or events or moments like those games. And we've obviously, Jane, over a decade had incredible battles against each other, our teams, and they will define both our groups. We were obviously fortunate to come out on top in some of those games. But for me, I would have always, and Dublin would have always looked at you guys, our probably our greatest rivals over that period. There was like a symbiotic relationship between the Mayo supporters, the Mayo team, you on the sideline, and there was a couple of different coaches in between that as well, and some epic battles. I couldn't get over, James, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. We did a show in this season, a live football pod show, and you'd obviously had a really, really difficult league final this season, just gone against Kerry, and then a massive game against Galway in Castlebar, which just went their way, and Galway kind of kicked on from that. We did a show in Castlebar, about 500 people. Was it a week, Tommy, before you guys played Monaghan?
Just for Monaghan. It was a couple of days for Monaghan, yeah.
And I couldn't get over the atmosphere in Mayo around the team. Like, it was always the fans, the coach, the players, the mate, everyone was all in, and Mayo were going to win the All-Ireland. That was it was like a whirlwind. And this year, that was not the case, I have to say, in my experience. It was, I think it's fair to say, Tommy, Jimmy, you were there, the crowd, the Mayo supporters were probably not behind. They were questioning the team. They were questioning you, James, after everything you'd done for the team as well, that we lost the Kerry in the league final kind of really, really negatively and didn't back you to beat Monaghan. You did go on to beat Monaghan, but ultimately would lose quite strongly in the quarterfinal against Kerry. What was that like to manage for you, like I say, as a really experienced coach, having been the highs and lows of Mayo, whereas there seemed to be a disconnect this year between the fans, between the media, and between the team?
Yeah. Look, there's no question about it. The last couple of seasons have been difficult. I think there was lots of stuff going on. You know, after the Tyrone defeat, you know, where we bet you guys, right, in the semi-final, epic semi-final, all this kind of stuff.
I feel, James, that final defeat,
yeah,
seemed, from the outside looking in, that was a losing an All-Ireland final is a massive moment, obviously. But that final defeat, having beaten us in the semis, I was retired, but beating the Dubs, that was a massive, massive moment for me.
Sure. Absolutely. So, you know, we beat you guys and we're the world's best and everything is unbelievable. And we go out, you know, 3 weeks or whatever later and we don't do it and we're the world's worst. And I suppose there was where things were, and maybe with those, you know, over time, there was so much expectation and everything else that we'd finally beaten Dublin in championship, and it's only a matter of time, you know. Tyrone weren't a bad team, you know, that beat Kerry in the semi-final, you know, so it wasn't, we were just going to rock up and win it. But that final definitely changed people's perception. I think
James, the answer looking in, I don't think he's ever recovered from losing that game. But I have to say, we're not privy, we weren't in the group, but I was in the stadium for both of those games. But beating our guys was such a massive moment for our group, as we hadn't lost the game in 7 years. And for you guys and Andy Moran, a very good friend of ours, had been involved and in the stadium with him. There was a feeling in me when you beat Dublin that this was it.
Yeah.
And you've lost finals, James, and losing finals is not bloody easy. Like, but that felt for Mayo, the sense from the outside that we'd beaten Dublin, this was it. we are not going to lose this one. We've beaten those guys. We'll beat Tyrone. Sure. And it was never going to be that easy. And when you lost that game to Tyrone, and probably, obviously, Ryan's penalty, and probably not perform as you would have liked in the final, I don't think your team ever recover from that. And the relationship with the media, with the supporters, I from the outside, and I'd love to know, do you think it did, or maybe it didn't? And,
yeah, well, look, it was a couple of things. So the final definitely was an important moment. Things went crazy after that. Local media in particular, I'd say. And the approach I'd taken over the last couple of years was we kept cards close to our chest because we thought that was right for the players. We had so many young players, etc. So we thought that was the right way to do it. So there was let's say the local media in particular were very disappointed with the relationship we had with them or the information that we were giving them. So when things go wrong, you know, over time, when you're 8 years or 7 or 8 years an intercounty manager, there's going to be people that aren't happy with how you do things. So that
we weren't great with the media either, James, I have to say.
that sparked off. And
it feels like though Dublin media is more of a national thing. I think it's maybe intense on a different level. The interest in Mayo.
Yeah. That's sort of the point I'm getting to. Look, I don't want it to be the media. It was media's fault that we lost games. Or I'm not saying that, but
we're all in the media now.
The reaction after that in the local media in particular. I remember myself and Kieran Mackey. We were in our house having dinner, and next thing the night before we had a row in the car park about something or other. Like we're looking at each other, going, "Is this for real?" And then you know there were things like. No denial or no comment from management. No report ever rang us, or anyway, that was a small element, but that added fuel. And that's what happens then is, and you know, with Twitter now, and you guys know in the media, particularly Twitter and all that kind of stuff, there's no truth anymore.
Yeah.
And the truth's gone out the window on logic. Right. Of what people know and understand or have learned as goes, and it becomes whatever sort of propel the most.
It creates an atmosphere around the entire group,
and that's exactly the point, Paddy. I make that. I'm not at all blaming this for defeats or anything like that, but the players' families, let's say, read and hear and see and absorb that, and players absorb that, and it changes it shifts the
atmosphere.
Yeah, it's so. Even though people are, you shouldn't be reading that. That's not the case. You're absorbed by it because it's all around you. So it becomes a job for us then to try and you have to try and manage that or change that or whatever. So that was it. We definitely had to deal with a lot of that post the Tyrone game.
And James, we were in Castlebar for one night. In the middle of the championship, and we had a couple of 100 people, Mayo, the majority of which were Mayo supporters. The atmosphere around the team was, and no player ever reads the media. We never read it. We're not looking at it, but it's very hard to ignore in Mayo, in Dublin. That's the reality of it, and I couldn't get over. And Tommy, we were remarking on this. It was like there was just a negativity around the Mayo team.
Yeah, it seemed to go sour very quickly.
Oh, unbelievable. So, like I say, one of the biggest strengths of your teams and our battles between Dublin and Mayo over the years was like we felt we were playing Mayo, the county. We were playing the lads on the pitch, the stadium. It was like the atmosphere of those games. That seemed to be a little bit lost this year. And losing the All-Ireland final, that's what I ask about that Tyrone game. And that felt like a big defeat, probably worse than other ones. But I have a question, James, right? The league final this year and the atmosphere around that game and talking to Mayo supporters or ex-Mayo players, losing the league final is not the be-all and end-all, but the way you guys lost that and your approach to that from the outside looking in was probably questioned. And it felt like you never recovered from that. Was that the case?
I probably wouldn't agree with you, Paddy. I don't think the league final, it wasn't great. I suppose, and again, I don't want it to sound like I'm making excuses. I'm not at all, but there's always reasons and things like so. We trained the whole of that year. We had no location, we had no training pitch. I know this sounds crazy.
Pitch has been relayed, wasn't it?
Was that?
So
the back pitch had to be closed because that. So we had nowhere to train, and so we had to train in 8-10 different pitches, and some of them were up to standard, and we had to stop training sessions and that kind of stuff. But what that did is, I think it started as an injury trend that we couldn't get back in control. So we 13 to 15 players. So when, again, geographically, when we're traveling quite a bit and guys coming down here, there and everywhere, if the training and everything around that isn't at the standard required, it can, so plus from the year before, our two physios, one of them went to Connacht full-time and one of them is out in the sports center in Abu Dhabi. So we lost two really great guys that knew our guys physically inside out. So that coupled, just a trend developed that put us under pressure significantly. You know, we had two training sessions, we'd 9 to 10 players at training sessions. This is, you know, during the league, the last training session before the league final, we lost four of our starters on the Friday night before the, so it was like there was this, and it's funny how momentum goes and that kind of stuff. So there was a lot of that going on that we're trying to manage. We had a lot of injuries. I think the pitch and a few things like that added to it with some of the new medical. So there was that we were trying to, all that kind of stuff was going on. So that we were trying to get the team there, and for a lot, you know, for some of the games we had players that, you know, in the league that we were playing.
You have to do that, James. You're looking for guys to come through to supplement what you already had. What was the reaction? You were playing Galway 3 weeks later. Did it impact the team going into the Galway match?
The league final defeat?
Yeah.
Not necessarily, Paddy. Not. Okay. It would have been better to win it, of course.
It's always nice.
But I wouldn't say so. It was about, you know, we had that run into the Galway game at home. You know, I think 2 weeks before Galway, we got into the pitch, into McHale Park. You know, so it was about getting good quality training session there, getting players back in the field, getting ready for the Galway game. So very quickly, you could build the process around that. And the league final was very quickly in the wing mirror, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, it was such a quick season as well. It was such a short season this year. I have a couple of quick questions. You've been brilliant with your time so far. James, your mom is a Kiwi, and I've always been fascinated by this. Your dad, did he head over to New Zealand when he was...
He did. He, in the late 50s, he was, part of a big family. He was the middle of a big family of kids on a small farm in the west of Ireland. So he said, feck this, there's not much from here. So... Headed off to New Zealand and got to New Zealand. Not alone that, he ended up on a train and went down to Invercargill, as far south as you can possibly go, and got off a train there and no one at the train station, nothing, blackness, and basically milked cows in Invercargill. You know, getting up at 3:30 in the morning, milked cows there for 3 or 4 years, and then moved up through New Zealand and. Met my mother, obviously, in Auckland at an Irish dance in Auckland, and bang, that was it. Got married out there. So the four of us, I've two sisters and a brother. We were all born out there in Papakura.
And how long did you stay there?
I was there till I was 4 and a half.
John, so it's not quite as long as the Barrett brothers got in Mead, the Bowden Barrett and Geordie Barrett. They went to primary school in Mead, so I was wondering how much of an influence they had. So as New Zealand rugby had any influence on you? You mentioned you followed Liverpool growing up there.
All the time, yeah. My mother used to babysit Frank Oliver Frank Gallery's Anton Oliver's father. He was captain of the All Blacks. He was the first, you know, captain of the All Blacks team that wow. first went to South Africa. So he would have visited us anytime he was over. He would have visited us in Mayo, you know.
Yeah. But,
so we'd have a strong connection. My mother's father was played for the Auckland Blues as well, and sort of ran for New Zealand. So there'd be a very strong connection sports wise with New Zealand. And anytime the All Blacks are here, I try and get mum up to the game. You know?
There wasn't much of a rugby influence in Ballintober when you were growing up, was there, in the '80s?
No, not too much of anything besides Gaelic, but we played a bit. I played a couple of games and two with Ballina.
Okay.
Yeah, my brother played a little bit as well. So we played when we could, you know.
Like the term Horan Ball has been thrown around a lot over the last couple of years, and it's kind of
who created that? Who started that?
I'm not sure who started.
It was Tommy James.
It wasn't me. I wasn't me. I'll find out.
He's trying to pass the book here.
It could have been one of the lads in the 42 who started it, but I think it kind of tried to encapsulate that powerful, strong running game. We definitely saw it in the first 4 years of your management, but when you came back again for that second stint, I don't know whether it was after the 2019 semi-final and you had this new crop of players coming through who had won an under-21 All-Ireland and it just suited the players. I'm wondering, was it influenced in any way by what you like to see in a football pitch? Like what was it like? Because you had these powerful, fast players, even Enda Hessian, Ushin Mullin, Owen McLaughlin, Tommy Conroy is electric, Brian O'Donoghue. Maybe it was just the profile of player you had.
Yeah, well you know, I suppose from out of philosophy on how the game should be played and, you know, transition it as quick as possible from back to front, you know, create as much space with various options. You know, at a very simple level, that's sort of maybe the philosophy of, I think, the game, that, you know, attack early and, you know, if you can score early, if you can't, you know, if you can't pass it around, let's see when we can punch holes, you know. So that'd be the philosophy and how you put you look then at the players that you have and the type of profile of players that you have, and what's the best mix then of the players and your philosophy that you can have that's what you go at. That's our best chance of success. And we in the both stints, as you said, we had a lot of players like, you know, Lee, you know, Colin Boyle, Donny Vaughan, all these guys, and then the newer crop. They were key. These guys are you know, they're probably even faster than Paddy, I'd say. You know that's
Paddy Durkin.
Yeah.
I remember running after Paddy Durkin at All Ireland final, James. I don't think I've recovered yet.
Yeah. So we had a lot of those guys. So it was about utilizing those guys, and it's the way we like to play. We became good at you know attacking early before the opposition are set up. You know, the way they want to be. So it just developed, you know, we wanted to attack teams because a lot of teams, and you know, you take Dublin when they were dominant, a lot of teams were beaten weeks before they even got near Dublin, you know, and there was no way we were ever going to be like that. You know, we were going to attack on our terms and our way and the way we played strongly. And go after that. And I think we did well, you know, we did well on a lot of occasions. But that was the way it was. But you look at how you want to play it, and then you look at the players, what's the most effective way, then we can mash that together and go with that, you know.
James, if you don't mind, I'd love that. Like, you were the coach in 13 in the All-Ireland final, and we kind of scraped through in that game, and Mayo realistically could have won that game in the All-Ireland final. We had a couple of battles in 15 against Mayo, replaying semi-finals, different coaches. Rochford's team, obviously, in 16 and 17, the same story. Mayo could have won those games. And then you were back again in 19 and 20. We were exactly what you're saying. A lot of teams that played us, and Jimmy, I'd even include Kerry in this, they would play Dublin and they try and tweak their game to contain Dublin. And we would have always felt, and I would have said this, and we've spoken about this, about Mickey Hart's Tyrone team, they're trying to contain us and try and sit back. That was never going to work against our team, I felt. And I feel that now, looking at the All-Ireland champions, Kerry this year, I think Dublin are still probably in that bracket as well. If you're sitting back and trying to contain a team, you'll get to a certain point, but you're not going to win the biggest prizes. You might win a provincial title, you might get one all in a quarter final, semi final. There you're an example of this year with Rory Gallagher, obviously. But to win the biggest prizes, you have to be brave, you have to be aggressive, you have to play in the front foot. And why Dublin always struggled. It was like, we never played well in all Ireland finals. We didn't play well in all Ireland finals because we were playing Mayo, and they didn't let us play well because they were one of the only teams that played on the front foot. And you would say to your defenders, mark the double forwards, that's it. Keith Higgins will deal with him. Chris Barrett will deal with him. Brandon Harrison will deal with him. It was unbelievably brave. And that was the mentality, and like you're talking about there, James. It was, and not many teams did that. And Jimmy, your Kerry team didn't even do it. You felt like they were trying to tweak it to try and, how can we stop Dublin? Whereas when we played Mayo, and why those games were so epic over that decade was Mayo were just going for it. You had a total confidence in your team, in your players. Like I say, the supporters, the relationship was like, we're not afraid of Dublin. We're going to try and win this game. And you were so, so close at so many times. And if you look, and I'm sure there's Mayo supporters, and I'm sure you think about the change, and now for some of your players who've stepped away, what do you feel was that you came so close at so many times against us? And I'm blessed to be part of that team, and we won those games and won all Ireland's. What do you feel was the missing piece in those games against Dublin to win all Ireland's? I don't mean to annoy you on a Sunday night.
No, not at all. Oh God, no.
What do you think now, having stepped away and kind of had time to think about it? What do you feel would have been the difference against them in some of
the? I think the consistent thing, Paddy, over if you take it over the years is probably our return, our percentage return from shots.
Yeah,
I'd say. You know, it mightn't have been the case in every game, but consistently over it, it was probably our turn wasn't as high. I know, throughout your span, you got to a very high success rate and probably brought it to the extreme level of you know, you nearly over-engineered a lot of your scores at the end. I would say.
But
you brought it to a huge high level that you were probably 10-15% higher than us on your strike rate.
What was your target, James? Did you have a target for a game like that? Would you try and hit 70% or?
You'd be looking for 70 plus, but you didn't, you know, and you're looking for the right shot, but you don't want to in any way hinder a guy that he feels the shot is right. If he's earned the right to take the shot and he's comfortable, it's his 8-10 range, you know. So
that balance, James, of like, yeah, I'm backing you to pull the trigger, but do it in your range.
Don't
pull the trigger, but don't.
Just on that though, from
our point of view, playing against you guys, this is from the horse's mouth. We felt that was your Achilles heel.
Yeah.
Genuinely, we didn't think you were going to score. We didn't think you were going to outscore us. And Killian's obviously an amazing player, and the Kevin McLaughlin at different times, but. And you look at bringing it back to this year, the Kerry game, the quarter final, that third quarter where your Mayo are absolutely mowing Kerry down. Like you're turning them over, your athleticism, your physicality, your mentality is second to none. But the Achilles heel, from the outside looking in, James, and for playing against you guys, it was always going to come down. You guys could not. You weren't clinical.
But if you're putting a Ryan O'Donoghue and a Tommy Conroy in there, it's a
different. The guys were injured.
Any team missing one fella, never mind missing two of that quality.
But James, this is over a decade in these games against for us against Mayo. I know this year was the guys were injured, which was a pain in the hole for you guys, James. But we would always felt that you didn't have the clinical edge in the biggest games. What was that? Did you knew that yourself? You know,
the crackling. Well, we knew we'd always have we'd have a decent percentage of possession. We'd always back ourselves on that, you know. So it was once we have that, how can we be more effective? So we'd we'd work on that relentlessly, you know, decision of making wrong possession and the space creation around that, you know. But you know, the caliber of the team you're playing against has a huge impact on that, and you know, the shots you're taking and the pressure you're undertaking those shots, you know. So but look, there's room for improvement for sure.
We're going to wrap it up here, James. I've always wondered, is it a bit of a cultural thing? Kerry seem to be able to respawn corner forwards, left, right, and centre. They have no problem doing it. Like, even looking at the top scorers list in Mayo, in the Mayo Senior Championship this year, number one is Evan Regan, who is the county's nutritionist this year. I know he played for you for a couple of years. Yeah, number five is Andy Moran. Andy Moran, I think, is retired unofficially from club football. I think Paul Towey is the only senior panellist. I could be wrong, but that I had recognised on that list. Perhaps it's just... The sharpshooters, they're the hardest commodity to find in Gaelic football. That lad you can trust in corner forward. There's not that many David Cliffords about. There's very few Darren McCurries. That maybe when you have a couple of injuries and your A1 players aren't 100% or they're not there, you're not able to dip into the depths that Dublin had during that five in a row.
Hold on a second. Who's the highest scorer in championship history? Killian
O'Connor, yeah.
So you have Killian in there, and I think James is touching on a point. It's definitely worked. Like, where may we are now, and it's always about where it is now and where is it going. You get Tommy Conroy, you know, fit. Ryan O'Donoghue was gone on us this year.
That was a massive thing for us this year, James.
Massive.
Losing Tommy in the college game was like, you'd love to see Mayo with Killian, Ryan and Tommy. That's a serious performance.
Yeah, and there's others as well. There's Jack Carney, and there's a couple of guys there. If those guys are available and playing well, I'd fancy them to get the return rate needed. I really would.
That's good to hear. In 2014, when you stepped aside, you said the tank was empty after 4 years in charge, or had gone a little empty after that epic replay in Limerick against Kerry.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, we didn't talk about that, James.
We'll bring it up now when you're gone. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll bring it up again. is the tank empty now, James Horan? Like, you're still a young man. Will you ever go back to inter-county management?
At the moment, no. No. I sort of said before that I wouldn't go to another county. I just wouldn't, you know. Look, I'll be watching Mayo from the sidelines, and I'd love to get involved in the underage basketball. That's really coaching that.
That's interesting.
I love basketball. I love that sport, and I think it's a sport where you can really help kids, or you know, the way it's set up and the numbers and that kind of stuff. So that's probably where I'll spend a bit of time here.
If you don't mind, did you enjoy the management with Mayo? There were some unbelievable highs. You did it in two stints and went back. Personally, I couldn't think of anything worse. Genuinely. But
yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, 100%. No question.
Yeah.
Overall, look, the last year and a half was tough on everyone involved. Yeah. Tough on family, tough on everything. There's no doubt about that, you know, and it's not... But outside that, the times, the events, the occasion, the experiences, the people who've met and been involved with, and the players was absolutely phenomenal. We'll cherish it and really will. And it was a huge part of my life, my family's life. So we enjoyed it, and the kids enjoyed a lot of the experiences too, and you know, all that kind of stuff, and up to Dublin and everything about it, and up shopping for the weekend, and you know, so there's a huge amount of around you. That was good. So look, overall, huge positive experience. The people in Mayo were absolutely brilliant overall. And still today, you know, like I'm shopping in Dunn's and Lidl now, doing the weekly shop and all that, you'd meet people, you know, that might have relations or whatever that were sick, or might have, you know, members of the family in Dublin, and the games and Mayo games would bring them together. Yeah. Give them moments where that were really positive and great experiences for them. So when you hear things like that, you think, "Geez, we did overall make a
yeah,
make a contribution, you know.
We've heard a lot of that. James Horan, a two-time All-Star as a footballer, a brilliant manager for your county over the last 12 years. You've given everything to Mayo football. Enjoy the break, however long that is, and enjoy the football over the next little while and the coaching and underage level. We're going to let you get back to one of the kids' birthday parties. Really appreciate your time on the football pod.
No problem.
Thanks, James.
Take care.
Thanks so much, James.
No problem.
All right, lads. James Horan, give us an hour and more. Give us a lot there. A very interesting chat with someone who's given an incredible amount to Mayo football over the last 12 years. I enjoyed that, Paddy. He's someone you come up against quite a bit over the years. Yeah.
Interesting to say he wouldn't take another management job.
Interesting.
But I was wondering what would suit him, but once you manage your home county, I'd say it's hard to kind of go further afield then. Do you know?
Yeah. I wasn't surprised at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wasn't. I could get that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of food for thought in that interview from James Horan. This is the final episode of the season, lads. So well done on a brilliant year.
What a year.
No All-Stars for punditry, but...
Merry Christmas, lads.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, exactly. we've had a good off-season. We've had interviews with Stephen O'Neill and Paddy Talley, Jason Sherlock, Kieran Malloy, Shane McGuigan, James Horan. Plenty to listen back to and get stuck into if you missed it over the last couple of weeks. We are going to be back in, let's say, mid-January. We'll come back with a bit of a league preview, so I'm looking forward to that. Rest up, lads, over the next couple of weeks. Take it easy. Have fun. Look after yourselves.
I love that.
100%.
I've enjoyed it, boys. Well done.
Magic. Great time.
Well done, Jamie, on your first year.
Yeah.
Well done, lads, on your second year.
Thank you. Thanks to everyone at home for listening in. We are the Football Pod. We'll talk to you soon.
Au revoir.
Cheers, folks.